This is Down to Brass Tacks. We are looking at Owen Arthur Remembered on this program. Originally, we said we would go to 12:30. That's where Sir David Simmons will leave us. We've already had contributions from Dr. Clyde Maskell and Sir Henry Ford, who have left us. With us on the line, former Finance Minister Chris Sinclair and Barbados' High Commissioner to Canada, Reginald Farley. And therefore, we know that so many of you want to share your perspectives on the contribution which has been made by Owen Arthur to this country's development, and therefore we are going to extend the opportunity for you to have your say after the 12:30 news. Let's come to the telephone line right now. Hello? Good afternoon. It's 10 minutes after midday. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes,
good afternoon. I can make my contribution in respect to the giving of condolence and thing?
Yes, sir.
Or we've got to wait until after 12:30. I can go ahead?
You can go ahead, yes.
Okay. It was some regret that I learned of the passing of former Prime Minister, Mr. Owen Arthur, Professor. It's serious regret. And when you look back at the achievement of Mr. Arthur for his time, you cannot but conclude he would be an egalitarian. That's only a lot of big words, but that means somebody that believes in human equality, especially in social, political, and economic affairs. He had an egalitarian approach to politics. And one thing that stood out with me is with the no confidence with Mr. Sandiford, although it would have been a no confidence approach, the decorum that was applied. And I can't help but agreeing with some comments made earlier as regarding how his wit and satire with that politics of inclusion. I mean, those are so noticeable that it shows you he was a person with a mission and how he set out to achieve that mission. It is commendable, very, very noticeable. And it would be remiss of anybody to come and it would be out of place, really, to come and want to in any way sort of subtract or detract from all the achievement of it. It was 13 years? Hello?
It's 14. Hello?
14 years, right. So, I mean, amid it all, he would have done remarkably well.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take another call. You're on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sorry. This is Jeff Brooms here.
Yes, Jeff.
I'm calling on in three capacities, first of all. As president of the College and Parish School Alumni Association, as a former schoolmate of Mr. Sandiford.
Not Mr. Sandiford, you got
it. Mr. Arthur, sorry.
You were there with Mr. Sandiford, too?
I have Mr. Sandiford in my head for a reason, which I'll give you in a minute. And also a friend and a former St. Peter boy together. Now, I think Owen Seymour Arthur has been a genius in this country, a giant of a man, someone who has made our school exceptionally proud. I'm very pleased that only earlier this year, we were able to induct him into the CP Hall of Fame. I remember visiting his home, and we're standing there in the drizzles, and when I told him what it was about, his exact question to me, first question, are you also inducting Sandy? And I feel that was the openness and the broad-mindedness of the gentleman that was our Prime Minister, and that we all think very highly of. I want to say to his family and all his associates my deepest sympathies. I know his wife has been very friendly and very nice towards me every time I visited the home, and I really appreciate her muchly. And I think Barbados, like the Prime Minister said earlier, is a weaker country for his passing. Yes, sir.
Now, talk to me a little bit more about how you saw his contribution in greater detail. I mean, he was also an avid cricket fan.
He was more than a cricket fan, because I remember him at school. I would obviously say was his junior. He was a very, very good batsman with an outstanding square drive. And he loved to show off. He would obviously stay in his pose after the square drive. Now, I remember when he was Prime Minister. At the time, I was Vice President of the Barbados Union of Teachers. And I had gone to New York at my alma mater to ask for a scholarship for a Barbadian teacher. And we received a scholarship from the union. and we were selecting people to go up. Obviously, we knew it would have been a challenge. People go to New York for a whole year to do a master's in teaching, and they would struggle in Barbados. We had a social partnership meeting, and I remember Sir Leroy Trotman turning to the leader and saying, Jeff knows more about this, let him speak. And all we were requesting was that when the teacher is in New York studying, that they would still be having their salary paid in Barbados. And he thought, his exact words that this is such a progressive idea, he supports it. And so it happened. I think over 30 teachers in Barbados benefited from that as a result, because obviously it would have been difficult to go up for a year and you have your family set of support and whatever. And so I think educationally-wise, he was very good to us. I was a member of the Barbados Cricket Association Board of Management when we were preparing for the World Cup. And I think the meetings we had in President Stephen Allen and the members of the board, how he was absolutely, totally supportive of what we were trying to do. He was the driving force. I'm sure without the contribution of our Prime Minister, there would never have been a rebuilt Kensington Oval, and we definitely would not have gotten the final here or maybe any of the other games. So in terms of that aspect of education and sport, I think he has made this country better. I think we can all speak of his economic prowess. I heard the Prime Minister speak about CSME and whatever, and I'm totally on board of that. I think he led this country out of little difficulties into prosperity. And so I think as a politician, he was very, very strong. I remember many Sundays going into my LaCorda by my friend Glenn and Edward's house, and sometimes Mr. Arthur would be there, sometimes Clyde Mask would be there, and the conversation was so very strong, and Mr. Arthur was forthright, he had a vision, and nobody can question his intellect. So I think I really, really enjoyed the times that I was spent with him, but I spent with him either in my LaCorda or in his home there in West Stairs, or in my early days as a teacher at St. Lucie, at his father's shop on Saturday, before putting ourselves by South Hamilton Bend. So I just think he has been a regular person. Since he left politics, we would often meet in Third Avenue, Whitehall, by Sy Shop, where there was a special known as the Oinafer soup, because his soup had to have at least 5 pieces of pigtail, and it was reserved especially for him. If you wanted to reach an Oinafer soup, you had to pay extra, but he got it just like everybody else. So he would sit and talk with us, enjoy a good time with us, and I remember another member of mine to show the human being he was. He came to John Moore Bar one evening just to collect fish. I don't mind the rumors I hear people say about him at John Moore Bar, but I've never seen it happen there yet, not one time. He came to collect some fish, and I was sitting with a guy called Gordon Blakes, and he asked me, he always called me Mr. Principal, what do you have in the drink? I told him what I drink. I said I always support the local economy, and he got up and went inside. He walked into the bar itself, picked up the Mulgay Eclipse and gave him, dispatched me with it. Then he asked my friend what he's going to have, and he told him. He went and got a Johnny Walker Black. He did the dispatching himself, and he was Prime Minister of the country. So this human being, I wish we had more like him, and I think Barbados will miss him significantly. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Jeff Rooms. Let me come back to Sir David Simmons, because you have a limited time with us now. We go until 12:30, and you will leave us then. Much has been said since we last heard from you. What thoughts do you have in addition to what you've shared with us so far? Sir David Simmons.
Thank you, David.
Yes. There's somebody here coming from Beijing, 1948 New York. I'd like that person to just close your mic, please, because there's a background. Okay, thank you very much. Sir David.
Good. Well, I would wish to end my participation in recalling that I don't know how many people know it, that Owen Arthur had a deep fascination about the law. I used to see it in cabinet on Thursdays when he would be willing to discuss aspects of legislation that was before cabinet in an informed way. And you know, he was so enthusiastic about law that he asked me what were the books that Lord Denning wrote after he retired. And I gave him 4 or 5 volumes that Lord Denning had written in Lord Denning's best and most simple and engaging style. And he read them. And from time to time, he would call me at home and say to me, you know, I am reading The Due Process of Law at page 83, and there's something there. Explain that for me. And I would explain it. But I was very, very pleased that he was so interested in law. Now, from time to time, I would also send him cases that I became Chief Justice, judgments that I had given for his own edification. And on that note, I wish to say that I owe an enduring debt of gratitude to Owen Arthur for having reposed confidence in me to appoint me as Chief Justice in the face of great criticism and opposition, and to stand by me in the face of that criticism, a lot of it very carping criticism, and to learn 4 years ago from Owen Arthur at the supermarket, at Warren Sebastian Supermarket, that he appreciated the job that I did as Chief Justice, and he had the highest compliments for my tenure as Chief Justice. I don't have to repeat what he said about me as Chief Justice. I don't talk things about myself if I can avoid them. But he gave me that opportunity to serve as Chief Justice. He supported me 100% when we were trying to establish the Caribbean Court of Justice. When I was chairman of the high-level committee to plan the inauguration, I don't know how many Barbadians know that while I was Chief Justice, every month for 18 months, I went to Trinidad on the last Friday, the last Thursday, to hold a meeting of the Regional Judicial and Legal Services Commission and the High-Level Task Force to make sure that the Caribbean Court of Justice could become a reality and be inaugurated in April 2005. He was 100% behind me. And after my retirement, of course, as is well known, I had the opportunity to serve the government of Trinidad and Tobago and the government of Jamaica in chairing commissions of inquiry. And those opportunities were the direct consequence of my tenure as Chief Justice of Barbados, which tenure could not have happened without the confidence that Owen Arthur had in appointing me in 2001 November. Thank you very much.
So, David, before you go, there was some reference to the kind of initiatives that he brought to the Barbados Labour Party. And there was quite a lot of discussion about some difference in the makeup of the BLP versus the DLP. The suggestion that Owen Arthur sought to bring, with the politics of inclusion, more of a down-to-earth, average Bajan feel to the Labour Party. I think you referred to that earlier.
I referred to that. That was very important at the time.
Did it work? To what extent did that really work, though?
Well, the Labour Party won 3 elections on the trot. Under him. 1994, 1999. and 2003.
And you believe that that is ample evidence of the extent to which it worked?
I think people, the electorate, were able to identify with a new type of leadership in the Barbados Labour Party. Leadership in previous years had been equally effective and had done a tremendous amount to advance Barbados. Leadership under Tom Adams and Valbree for the year that he was there. But as I said earlier, there was a perception, not backed by fact, but there was a perception that the Labour Party was a middle-class party and we were supportive of the business, whereas the Dems were on the side of the working class. And Owen's image, for all that Reggie said, I think Reggie made the point very forcibly that Owen, by reason of his interaction with people at a grassroots level all over the country, not only in St. Michael, but in St. Philip, he would go by Morvell Jordan's place or the Skeets. In Silver Sands, as Reggie said, all over. He was there and the people were able to identify with him as one who had sprung from among them and who had not forgotten that he'd come from among them. And, you know, I wish to say that Owen exemplified excellence in his political and economic career, that a kind of excellence that cannot be inhibited by social status or social barriers. And he has set a standard for others to follow in future. Clearly, a very great Barbadian and a very, very great Prime Minister. And I am humbled to have served with him. Thank you very much.
Sir David Simmons, thank you very much for joining us and sharing in this tribute to former Prime Minister Owen Arthur. We have a few more seconds before we go to the latest news, where we will update you on what others have been saying about the passing of Sir David Simmons. And, you know, this person says that during the 2002 period, Owen Arthur toured the St. Michael West constituency as he visited St. Leonard's School. As our planning committee outlined the refurbishment of St. Leonard's School, the improvements at the canal behind the Globe in Bank Hall, in the Bank Hall area, that used to flood, choosing of the area for housing units in the Passage Road area, lights on the Passage Road pasture, and to a large extent, island-wide. Lots of our suggestions, says the writer, were utilized by others in his cabinet. Owen Arthur told them in Parliament he wished others in the communities were like this person, Raul Maycock. He says here, the late Ling Pong Barnett had prepared a serving of many dishes that day, and we asked the PM to take the first dish. He replied, "Roy, you're the man of the moment. You lead the openings." So that is a reflection of one of those people, average Barbadians, with whom Owen Arthur came into contact. We are going to have more tributes as we look at Owen Arthur Remembered and Down to Brass Tacks. I hope that the others can stay with us, Reginald Farley and Chris Sinclair. And we expect to be joined by some others during the course of this continuing tribute to the late Owen Arthur. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Today, Owen Arthur Remembered. So far in this program, we've heard from Ambassador Dr. Clyde Maskell, Sir Henry Ford, former Finance Minister Chris Sinclair, and Sir David Simmons, who is very much alive, contrary to what I might have said towards the transition to the news. They have all left us now, but we have on the line Reginald Farley, Barbados's High Commissioner to Canada, and we also have our Ambassador to Washington and the OAS, Ambassador Noel Lynch. There are other people who have joined us online as well, some on the telephone and some via Zoom. Let's perhaps go to one of those who joined us via Zoom. There is a Bajan, 1948, New York. You've been here for quite a while. Can you come in and give us your assessment of the leadership of the late Owen Arthur, if you're still there? I don't see any movement coming from you, so let me cross over to Ambassador Noel Lynch. Good afternoon, Ambassador Lynch.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
Yes, I'm well. And you?
I am doing fine. I'm sad, very, very sad today, I must admit. Let me say today, I join all Barbadians in mourning the loss of Owen Seymour Arthur. In my opinion, one of our most esteemed sons. His journey from one of the illustrious three blind mice of which David Simmons, Sir David Simmons was one, to the highest political office in the land is very well known. For me, Mr. Arthur possessed a brilliant mind, an acerbic wit, quick tongue. He combined an intellectual brilliance with a street smarts that's not readily seen in many, many people. People either have one or the other, but Owen Arthur had both. I don't think that people really recognize that Owen Arthur, even though he's recognized as having done so well in the economic sphere, led Barbados at a time, assumed the leadership really at a time not too dissimilar from the difficulties that we are facing today and for which we are steadily seeking to emerge. Prime Minister Arthur managed the economic affairs of Barbados and led Barbados during a global economic recession, two Gulf Wars, the effects of the 9/11 terrorist acts in the United States, and a global health crisis too, as well as exhibited through SARS and foot and mouth disease, and left us with a legacy of sustained economic growth during the period. He was a champion for education and fervently believed that through education and the opportunities it provided, that there would be that natural economic movement and progression from poverty to the middle class. He actually always reminded us that we came to office to stop poor people from being poor. He said that. Reggie Farley sat next to me, so he knew that too. He believed that there was where one was born should not determine the measure of a man, while at the same time he believed that no one should ever forget from whence you came. He was tremendously proud of his success and often reminded us of the sacrifices that the ordinary Barbadian made to ensure a better life for their children and for their children's children. Arthur was as comfortable at the corner shop or rum shop, as people would say, as he was in the cabinet of Barbados, or when championing the cause of Barbados and the entire Caribbean community. And he prided himself, though, as being a very ordinary Barbadian. Never once did he vary from his mission to ensure a better life for all Barbadians, remaining true to the motto of the Barbados Labour Party. But he was a different type of leader in many ways from those who preceded him, fiercely nationalistic. He re-engineered our economy in such a manner, homegrown, that it resulted in increased prosperity for all. And he possessed that ability to combine his knowledge and familiarity with the world of international finance with his experiences as an economist in Jamaica at the time. I had the pleasure and honor to serve him in his cabinet from 2000 to 2008. I served in the Senate as well from 1994, and later as Minister of Tourism and International Transport. I think he saw in me, David, a fierce passion and a determination to serve the people of Barbados, and he challenged me to reinvigorate at the time a flagging tourism industry as a major driver of our economy. Serving under his leadership provided me with the grounding necessary for a young politician to achieve the success that I had as a minister, and I will long remember and treasure his description when he once told me that he thought I was the best tourism minister that Barbados ever had. This is an accolade that humbles me to this day.
You know, there was a lot that was very positive, and a lot of that has been said here so far. Owen Arthur, for all that he did for the Labour Party, left the Labour Party. What impact did that have on people like yourselves?
Well, I was particularly saddened by that particular, by his departure from the party, because I know that Arthur had reached out and tried to embrace all in Barbados and tried to bring all into the fold of the Barbados Labour Party. He believed in spreading this big tent. And I know that people, there's a deep political divide in Barbados between parties, but Arthur believed that you couldn't just jettison at the end of a 5-year period or a 10-year period all those who had contributed and wanted to bring them in. And therefore, when he left the party, seeking to spread that big tent and making the Barbados Labour Party much more of the party of first choice than it ever was before his leadership. He said that before his leadership, for example, we may have won elections, but Arthur wanted to make this party a party of inclusion. And therefore, when he left, it hurt us. It hurt us who had served with him. And I think it also hurt a lot of Barbadians, ordinary Barbadians, and those of the rank and file of the party. He kept on saying that the one thing that you never wanted to do, even if you came in conflict with your party, was to come in conflict with the rank and file of your party. And I think that really disturbed and hurt a lot of people in our party at the time.
Let's take another call. Good afternoon. Welcome to Down the Brass Stacks. Yes.
Good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Holding up. Glad to join this esteemed group of guys you have there, Reggie Farley, Ambassador, and of course, Ambassador Lynch. This is Ainsley Benn.
Yes, Ainsley Benn. You are a relative.
Yes, first cousin. My mother and his mother were sisters.
Tell us about life growing up.
Growing up in the same, being looked after by the same grandmother, sleeping on the same ottoman, same promoted to the same bed. Went to school together. We walked to school together at all times. Walked to school together at Cozen Prairie. Kept animals together. We kept sheep together. Tied them up together. Any evening I couldn't get home, he would bring my sheep. Or any evening, in fact, he always get home early because he never had a detention at school. I was sometimes detained, so he would get home before me. But we had a good relationship growing up. I was a few months older than he was. I was born in January of 49, and he was October 49.
So explain how, after doing so many things together, you had different political views.
Well, we all grew up in the damn South, I must say that to you.
All right.
My grandmother, Donzilla, Auntie Cassie, all of them, Doll, his mother, we were all Uncle Frank. When Uncle Frank was independent, when Uncle Frank ran for the Democratic Labour Party.
Uncle Frank being?
Frank Walcott, Uncle Frank, Sir Frank Walcott.
Okay.
So you can grow.
So he was uncle. He was uncle biologically, so or
no,
you just called was, him
no,
Uncle
no,
Frank.
No, 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 no. Everybody called him Uncle Frank.
Okay.
Uncle Frank Walcott. So we knew him as Uncle Frank Walcott, and when you see my grandmother go to a political meeting in Manila Corner, she always had a stick with her, and nobody could say anything bad about Uncle Frank. But we grew up in the damn South, and then of course.
So politically, there was that point where you were together.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a member. In other words, a member, but I know the household was them.
Yeah, so that explains the admiration for Errol Barrow?
Oh, yes. Oh, of course. Yeah. He always had that admiration for Errol Barrow because I remember even when he went to Jamaica to study, I went to Jamaica on two occasions, 76 and 79, and I visited him in his apartment, but whenever he came back to Barbados between 74 and 78, 79, he always stayed with me. I had just got married in 74, July the 27th, which is 46 years today, 46 years of marriage today, and I had a little house there in Ben Hill, and whenever he came back on holiday, he will stay with me.
So how did the Labour Party capture him?
Come on, in 1981, I'm told, when, of course, Tom Adams had a pretty keen and sharp eye, and he observed that this youngster was very sharp, a very intelligent guy. He was like that from that school. Very, very intelligent guy. Sometimes I used to wonder what was in his head. He used to come first in all these subjects, and he was very good. So it wasn't difficult when Tom Adams, I'm told, spotted him. And I brought him back from Jamaica. He was serving as a senator. He was the chairman of the BADC at the time. So in 1984, after Burton Hines gave up the through illness the seat, Arthur was nominated to serve as the person to represent the Barbados Labour Party in the Tom Adams administration.
So what was the tone of the conversations now between you and him?
The thing about it is that Arthur never came to me, not that he had to, but he never came and said, "Man, listen, I switch." He never said that. Not they said he didn't have to, but I maintained my support for the Democrat Labour Party, and my support for the Democrat Labour Party was out of my respect and admiration for what our Barbara did for the family. I'm the fifth of 10 children, and the rest above me were bright, but they never went to secondary school. And I was the first to go to secondary school at Coach Quarry. And
tell me that there was no real strong difference of opinion expressed between the two of you on the political divide?
No, because he was always supporter. He was always supportive of the Democratic Labour Party, and I say that without fear of contradiction. But it was his privilege, and he took the opportunity. As I said, Tom saw him and came up on he went over on that, and he did very well for the party. Very well for the party. The only time we will have had discussion, though, I remember in 87, 1987, and in those years, even up to 93, when, I know in 93, 92, when he was struggling a little bit, maybe if I may use that term.
That's when he went into Parliament saying that he was possibly going to quit politics?
Yeah, plus two, when Arthur went to run for the Barbados Labour Party, there was a split down the middle of the family, down the middle. And I always said to him, every weekend he comes to Ballincorra, to Ben Hill, I would say to him, "Arthur, when we must be seen talking," because I had a group, my family side remained Dems, his family side went Bs. And it was always, and people were young, and we had the youngsters, Desmond and those young, and they were politically immature. And I always said to him, I probably was much immature as well, but he had to say to him all the time, "Let us all be seen together chatting. Let there not be any friction between us, because we don't want any further divide among the family members." And we kept that position. And then I used to always encourage him. One day I said to him in 1992, I remember the words I said to him, because he was struggling a little bit, and I think he was trying his utmost to find his place among the leadership of the Barbados Labour Party. And I remember saying to him one day, "Don't worry, the stone that the builder refused will one day become the head of the cornerstone." And he smiled. And I was pleased when the two other members of the Barbados Labour Party, Sir Henry Ford and now Sir David Simmons.
Okay.
David Simmons, the three of them were in the house together, remember?
Yes.
And they traded him, the two of them, obviously, not under any real pressure, but wanted to keep him for sure and make sure that he had some form of income, made sure that he became the leader of the Barbados Labour Party. And from then, I know that he wasn't very, very comfortable at first, but by the time he had moved that vote of no confidence against Sir Lloyd as Prime Minister, And he started to grow in prominence. By the time election came in 1994, the chorus was, "We go in, we don't win." That was the That was the election slogan, "Be going with the wind." He had gained in popularity after winning the 1986 general election. But there was never any real discussion between the two as to whether he should go or whether he should not go. That was, I had an understanding. And I always remained, though, committed to the Democratic Labour Party. He went on the side of the Barbados Labour Party. No hard feelings.
Not even when he put some blows in the Dems?
No. I don't know what people call...
Electoral blows, when they talk about...
Yeah, electoral blows. They are only the politically immature people who will see these things as damaging blows and stuff, but that's how politicians operate. When the politicians will attack one another, when the nights come, and then the next morning they will call one another and say, "Man, listen, I dealt with you last night." And you get a fellow say, "Well, you know, my turn tonight, though." And these fellows, there was a camaraderie existing among politicians, not like today, and not like today, but even supporters, because supporters nowadays become so polarized that if you can't be seen talking with a B, or unless you're being accused of switching over, or if a B is seen talking to you, he can change. It wasn't like that in the early days. But the more mature politicians, though, I must add, and I think you heard this morning somebody on your program allude to that, the mature minds that were politicians in those days. And if you remember, there were times, I remember one day I went to the House Assembly, and I saw Aaron Barr and Tom Adams tearing at one another, tearing in a debate. Hey, suddenly I saw Adams got up, nod to Barr, and the two of them went behind the speaker's chair, had a discussion and come back, and the matter was resolved. I said, "What? Is this the way it is? Are we over here appearing to be cutting people's throats?" And I learned a lot from those early, mature politicians. The politicians of today are too narrow-minded and immature, too polarized. They've polarized their people, and therefore, they're not like the old system.
Did you identify anything that you and Owen Arthur saw as consistent with the philosophy of the Democratic Labour Party, that in your judgment he was able to take to the BLP?
He respected, although some people felt that before the free secondary education, and then he had got a bursary as a bright fellow. He had got that amount of marks. I think he didn't have to pay school fees, because he had to pay school fees. That's why there was this feeling that free secondary education came out before 62. But he always respected what Barristan stood for in terms of secondary education. In our days growing up, we used to bring water from the pipe. There were a lot of things that poorer people were having to do. And as the years rolled by in the 60s and even beyond independence in the 70s, he respected the development of the country, and he thought, therefore, when he became prime minister, to improve on that development. He was a people-minded person. He had all his Barrow's traits. That's why when he started to bring people from the Dems onto Bees, it wasn't difficult for him to do that.
Hinsley Benn.
Yep.
Thank you very much. And if you want to, you can stay with us as we take more calls in tribute to the late Owen Arthur.